Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and online, tsn1050.ca. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Bob McKenzie later this hour. We bumped Jerry in the previous hour, so Jerry's percentages will be happening momentarily. We have a poll question up on Twitter at overdrive1050 that is scaring me. The results are scaring me. I'm assuming people think that we're playing an April Fool's joke with the question, and people voting in a certain way are indicating that they're along for the ride, like they're in on the joke. Because I mentioned earlier, and this actually wasn't a joke, so maybe I should know better, but my wife for the past 25 years has always been a believer that O.J. Simpson was driving the Bronco during the O.J. chase, not Al Cowlings. O.J. was driving. I mean, that's the number one pop culture item of the 90s. Like, yeah. Everyone on Earth has seen the O.J. chase. And I thought everyone knew O.J. was in the back with a gun and was nowhere close to the driving wheel or the steering wheel.
Maybe she just didn't pay that close attention to it. Like, she just was like, okay, he's in the car or whatever, you know. Maybe she wasn't into it that much. I don't know.
There's some sick people out there. Like, that car was purchased, and you can actually rent it.
Oh, come on.
I'm not lying. It's one of those novelty things. You can go to L.A., and you can rent the O.J. Bronco.
Really? I have not heard of that.
Yeah.
Like, why would you ever want to be close to that thing?
I'll be honest. Like, late 90s, we went out to L.A. We had a day off. I was with the St. Louis Blues. And you could rent those luxury cars. Oh, I don't know if you ever did this. You could rent, like, a Lamborghini for a day.
Guys did that out in Arizona, too. Okay, let's get a Ferrari and go for a buzz through the mountains and come back.
So I played with a guy named Harry York. So Harry the Head York, this guy had a head like a mascot, huge man. And so Harry was a car buff. So he goes, let's go rent one of these luxury cars. So I think we rented a Dodge Viper. Do you remember the Dodge Vipers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we put him in the front seat. It was a sunroof because, you know, his head wouldn't fit in there. So we're driving around. We drove up to Bundy. Like, we drove up to back then, you could kind of drive by it. I think now they've changed the route of the where the crime scene for O.J. was and all of that.
Right.
But you could actually, like, drive by the crime scene and stuff, and there was a cop car sitting there, like, kind of directing people because it was a tourist. Like, it was weird. It was a tourist area.
That's
like people,
and
it is. It's sick, and I'll admit that I.
Well,
I went there. Yeah.
It's history, though. Like that, It's strange. It's weird, but the fact is, it's history, and most people, in North America anyway, have seen the images and they know the townhouse, and they. I don't know if they would know the street necessarily, but it's like the Manson massacres.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's
Sharon
that
Tate,
house
yeah.
on. Was it Cielo Drive or whatever it is, and up in the hills, and that people drove by there forever. I think they eventually knocked it down, but I'm sure there's still a house there.
I don't know, if you ever did this on the road, is I did the whole book depository tour in Dallas. Like, the grassy knoll, all of that. Is it Zapruder film?
Zapruder film, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you can put on a headset, you can walk through, and I mean, to me, I'm a conspiracy theorist, so I still want, the truth to come out. Put it that way.
Is it marked though? Like, is there a plaque or a statue there? Like, what?
Not if you walk the route. Like, you you can walk down the street and basically exactly where, it all went down. But you can go on the tour and. It breaks it down basically frame by frame on how everything, and you listen to like sound. It's quite chilling. And I did it, I think my first time in Dallas, you go in the day before and you get in that afternoon before dinner. I went and took the tour and just kind of, a little, it's a sad part of history,
I would love
but it's
to
a
do
piece
it.
Of
Yo,
history.
Of course it is. Like there's nothing happy about it. There was an assassination there, but it's a huge part of history. I mean, as a history buff, myself, I think. I mean, I don't know if I don't think I deserve the buff title, but
right.
I'm into history and I enjoy checking out history. It's I've always been intrigued by how stuff like that is commemorated. Like I would
right.
think the scene of the murders, they would not be wanting anyone to pay attention to it. They wouldn't have any signs up, no plaques or anything. That's just the owners of the building and owners of the land.
Right.
I would think. Now, you know, the Kennedy assassination, that's American history. So
right.
I would assume like that is probably detailed. But to go further into it and even darker, deeper into it, when I was in Berlin years ago, like the bunker where Hitler killed himself, it's not even marked. Like it's underground. It's obviously up on the ground. It's been built up and there's I think a building there and there's gardens and stuff, but there's no signs. There's nothing. Like, they don't
yeah.
want people knowing this is where it went down. But if you're from there or you're a tour guide, you're like, this is it. You know, we're standing
yeah.
over top of it.
I'm a big kind of true crime fan. I always have been. I like to read about it and stuff. I know it is a little bit morbid, but you're right. Like, it's a part of history. And, you know, if I happen to be in a city where, you know, you had some time to kill, like, I will try and... you know, seek out some of their monuments, some of the great monuments, too. You go to Washington, oh, I'm sure you walked around there, the monument and, you know, like...
Washington's chock full of history. It's great.
It is.
Washington's a great city
and
to
walk.
Such
a
cool
it's such
town.
A beautiful city. Like, And why not? Instead of sitting in your hotel room and worrying about the game the next day, I would go for a walk. I would go and try and at least absorb a little bit of the city. And that's why, I mean, obviously I fell in love with Nashville 5 seconds after I was there because I went and bellied up at a, you know, at Legends on the corner and absorbed some of the music,
right.
you know, vibe. But these cities are great. And Dallas, like I know it, again, it's a part of American history, but, you know, I always tried to seek out in certain cities. I mean, unfortunately I lived in New York and 9/11 and all of that stuff, but, you know, to at least go to these areas and appreciate it, you know, and show a lot of respect. That was the kind of the way I thought.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. In a circle back on the OJ driving the Bronco, we posed the question asking people online, did you think, have you always thought OJ was driving the Bronco? 49.3% voting yes. 50.7% no. It is basically... it's split down the middle. Half of society on Twitter that follow us, and we're talking well over 1,200 votes. Yeah, that was
insane.
OJ. That's OJ cruising around.
Well, we have a younger demographic, so I'm giving them the, like, I mean, there is somebody within this show that admitted to us on the group text that he actually thought that OJ was driving the Bronco. So I don't know if we want to out him, but
he's grappling for the truth.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
put it that way. He's trying
exactly.
to grapple the truth online.
Yeah. Never right. in his life has he ever
never in his life. Well, I guess if it's just called the OJ Chase, I understand if you've never watched the tape, you might
right.
just assume. But anyway, moving on. Bob McKenzie in about 15 minutes. We bumped Jerry and we're continuing to make him hold, so he's not going to be in a good mood. You guys ready for Jerry's percentages?
Yes.
You're going to want to hear this.
Jerry's percentages.
I don't love being commissioner as much as I used to. I actually love it even more.
That's the voice of a f***ing
Hall of Famer.
Are you kidding? Have you been out drinking?
Jerry!
You're all pigeons. Filthy, filthy pigeons.
It's Jerry. G-E-R-R-Y.
And Jerry's Percentages is brought to you by our friends at BPC, Best Portuguese Chicken. From two people to 300, let BPC, Best Portuguese Chicken do the cooking. Head on down to 942 on the Queensway or online, bestpc.ca. Jerry has an opening statement. Let's hear from Jerry.
Jerry's been spending the past few days watching classic moments in NHL history. Like when I moved the Nordiques from Quebec to Colorado and the Jets from Winnipeg to Arizona. Classics that are making Jerry horny, and I mean horny for another relocation. So keep your head on a swivel because Houston is ripe for a new team and a couple of Canadian franchises are looking ripe for the picking. And you know exactly what I mean. Right for the picking is what Jerry uses when he walks into a bar.
Well, that's not good. I mean, no one wants to hear that right now, the idea of relocation.
No.
He better be joking. I hope that's an April Fool's. Better
that
be. Is
that's an April Fool's from Jerry.
Yeah, let's hope.
I hope so. Let's get to the hot takes this week.
The Blue Jays head trainer was probably sweating through his underpants, expecting some of his guys to balloon worse than the overdrive slobs. But to the surprise of everyone, when the Jays return, Vladdy Jr. will weigh in below his day one camp weight. Not hard to beat 290 pounds.
Just relax, Jerry. It wasn't 290. This guy's he's foolish today on April Fool's. But that's a take, man. That I don't know exactly where Vladdy was day one. You'll notice that never got announced. There was no shifting of the website weight.
Well,
but
when
let's
does
say
it ever get announced, Brian? When does it ever get announced?
It won't be.
It's
it
announced when it's what? When it's good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it yep. is.
So it's never announced when it's what? Bad.
Right.
Very simple.
So do you think after quarantining, let's say he shows up in 3 months, he'll be under the weight he was day one in Dunedin?
0%. It's impossible. It's 0%.
It's not impossible.
Brian, listen to me. I know the body type. You know the story of me sitting at the bar, sweating and wishing the season never started. That is Vladdy. I know the body type. He's just not active enough. He's sitting around. Apparently, it's either his mom or his grandma that's just an unbelievable cook, and he is shoveling groceries in his face like you would not believe right now. There is 0%. Yeah. There's no more 0% Jerry than that one. It's 0%. Like, are you understanding me? It's actually
yes,
a dumb
you.
Question.
No,
it's 0%.
Not. I have faith in Vladdy.
What do you think Vladdy's doing? You think he's walking on a treadmill 12 hours a day?
No. No, I don't think he does.
What do you think his feed routine is?
I hope it's reasonable. I hope it's better than mine. It better be. He's a pro athlete. I'm a slob on the radio.
And
you know,
he
but,
is hungry. He's hungry.
I'm worried.
And it's
I'm 0%. A little bit concerned, but I'm going to say 35%. I'm going to give him a chance at a little bit more time to extend what he's been doing during the off season, and I'm going to give him a shot. You know, I want to believe in Vladdy. I'll give him 35%.
Yeah, I'm 6%, but I'll tell you why. Is we don't know, to both of your points, we don't know what that number was. So say he stepped on and it was, I don't know, 265, and they want him at 250. He can realistically come back at 257, and is that an improvement?
Yeah.
Technically it
is. Technically it
right?
would be.
Even though they would like him maybe at a different number. So I think there is... The only, I guess, saving grace in where I'm putting 6% is if he showed up and the number was unacceptable when they thought they were playing. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Like, well, I mean, let's hope it happens at all. Let's hope we find out at any point. But
yeah, listen, I'll take Vladdy at 300 pounds right now. It doesn't matter because I know he'll mash, and I know that means that the world is healthy and we're watching pro
sports.
We're back
playing. We're
so
back
I'll
playing,
ta-
exactly.
I'll take him at whatever.
0%.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mullen.
Austin Matthews will be voted a top four forward in next year's NHLPA players poll. Maybe if he shaves that mustache, it'll help his cause.
Top four next season.
I'll say 65%. He's definitely got the ability. He's got it in him. It's just a matter of... Just being that guy, that dominant guy. It's amazing. You got to earn your stripes for some reason among people like ourselves. It's like, you know, when you talk, I heard Ray talking the other day. He's like Draisaitl and McDavid and MacKinnon. And it's just, I think he said, you know what? He's close, but he's just not at that level yet where it's every night the dominant player. And he's right underneath that. But to make that step, it's a big one. So... I'm going to say 65. He's definitely got it in him. It's whether he wants to do it or not.
My only, I guess, detractor of that is I don't, like, he's a goal scorer. Is he a 100-point guy? Like, that's where I think people start to focus on, right? He scores goals, and he's a terrific passer. He's got, you know, great deception in his game. But do you ever see Matthew scoring 100 points?
Yes, I do. I think it's a matter of time until he gets there. I think this year, what was he on pace for? About 90? You know, maybe a little bit more than that. It's not like he's in the 65 range and he's got to find 35 points. But I think it's not so much the number, it's who you're going to knock out that would be my concern. I think McDavid and McKinnon are there. I think Draisaitl will get in next year. So is he going to pass Crosby? Is he going to pass, you know, Kucherov if he has a monster bounce-back year, although he's still having a very good year? That's the only concern for me. I think he's got more than enough capability. Like, he's on pace for 55 this year. If through the first 60 games next year up until they make the vote, he's on pace for 60 again, that's going to get a ton of love.
Pasternak
gets some. Yeah, exactly.
I'm a little bit lower, Brian. I didn't give a number. I'll say 22%.
Yeah, I was asked this earlier on the lunch, and I definitely think it's feasible by all means. It's totally reasonable. I can picture it, but it's a process of elimination, and I don't know if he can get into the top four next year. I think he might need a full monster year with a rocket and maybe up for the heart, and then the next year he gets in there. So I'll go 20%, just under you, Noodles.
Tiger and Phil 2.0 will happen before the end of May.
It better be better than the last one, because that sucked big time.
Tiger, Phil 2.0 by the end of May. I will say 20%. I'm low on this. Go ahead.
I'm going to say 15%. I just can't see it happening. They're just...
Yeah.
Where the hell are they going to play? Where are they going to play?
Well, my bigger thing is, it's not so much where they're going to play. It's will their publicist call them up and say, guys, not a good idea. Like, not the time.
Yeah, not when you have the president, like, really basically saying they think they're going to have a couple hundred thousand people pass away with this, and the worst is yet to come. Like, that's, you know...
That's not happening.
I really just, and it's more to your thought process, Hayes. Like, even if people are trying to have something positive in their life, even if it's for raising money, it's just a tough optics. You know, it's tough optics when, you know, you've got a war zone in New York and a war zone in California, and you got two guys walking the course, you know, kind of yucking it up. It doesn't look good, even though it may come from a real, the proper place and trying to raise money. I'm low on this. I'm 4%.
Yeah, I'm 15%. Not even. I'm 10. I'm 8%.
Okay. Yeah, we're all low. I mean, I want it to happen as a distraction, as something to look forward to. Safety precautions clearly at the forefront of it all. But it seems like there's a lot of hurdles that they'd have to jump through. Go ahead, Mullen.
That poser, Roger Goodell, is being such a hero with this NFL draft. But it'll somehow stand pat and go off as scheduled later this month.
Well, this is in the same vein as Tiger and Phil. I mean, now there's a lot of pushback being directed towards Goodell in the NFL. That now, you know, you shouldn't have the draft. Now's not the time. People aren't in a position to concentrate on it. You're stealing the limelight from the players who should be able to celebrate, and they can't. But that was the case earlier in the week when Goodell sent that memo out and said, no public criticism, we're doing it, it's happening. I think he sees an opening here where it's like TV networks want it and there's nothing else on, and the NFL is just going to put up monster numbers. Like, the NFL draft will do monster numbers in the States and up here, but I'm going to leave the door open to something happening between now and the end of April where they decide to change their mind. I'll say 80% it still happens at the end of the month.
I'll say 65. It was kind of weird. Even I think Schefter had some comments in disbelief that this is still going on. You know, when he has those comments, it's like, did he not have comments today?
He's
like,
he did. Last night on SportsCenter, he was going off, and he is careful to bite the hand that feeds him.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 65%. They just buy, like, they're going to do it. They got to do it in their minds, and they're going to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm 50-50. I just think that there's so many things coming down the pike, you know, what we don't know. And as much as we want to, I think it's a coin toss, to, you know, depending on how this is going to unfold.
At least two of Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, and Marc Gasol have played their final game as Raptors.
Marc Gasol's probably been drunk ever since quarantine started, and you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, the big man knows how to party. He knows how to have a good time.
Imagine recreating the parade in your living room by yourself, just spraying champagne all over the place.
Just having a great old time. Yeah. And I'm working under the assumption that Jerry's working under the assumption we're not going to play again the rest of this year. So this Jerry's is taking into consideration that the 2019-2020 season is over. So Ibaka will be a free agent, Gasol will be a free agent, and Lowry will have 1 year left on their deal.
It's got to be two or three?
Two or three are done.
I'm going to say 75%.
I'm lower. I think one of three. But, I mean, man, it just, you know, things could look just a lot different depending if you do lose this season. Like, it just...
Well, the other element I'm considering is UFA status, right? It's not just the Raps and the Lightning.
Right.
It's other teams are going to have interest.
Yep. Yep, for sure. I mean, that's what's going to happen here. I think Lowry's got another year on his deal, so I don't think they're going to flip him. I think he'll come back. I think he returns. He had a good year. I think Lowry will return. They've got to sign Van Vliet, and Van Vliet is a free agent as well. I mean, I guess he could have been included in this, but he's younger. It seems like he loves it here, and they're going to be committed to him. They're going to pay what they have to keep him. I've been of the belief that Gasol's done after this year anyway. I think his body's breaking down on him. He's a great player, but he's already 35 or 36. Ibaka's the guy, though, that I think they're going to really try to keep. And he's been great all year. He was great last year.
Yeah. There's going to be a want, though, from outside.
That's the question, is a lot of other guys, because it's not a great free agency class.
No,
and Ibaka's put himself...
They're going to want a veteran glue guy that can score occasionally, be a presence, and that could be their guy. Who knows? That's what I fear.
Yeah, but I'm going to say I don't think Gasol will return. I think Kyle will. I think Serge will come back. I mean, there's a price tag on everything, and if he's going to get too much somewhere else, they're going to have to let him go. But I'll say 40%. 40%. All right, boys. Good stuff, Jerry. Jerry was actually in a decent mood.
Very sharp,
Yeah, not bad at all. We might have something left over for Jerry's After Dark as well, so we can get to that later in the hour. And we got two more battles courtesy of the Overdrive Madness audio bracket, and our hockey insider Bob McKenzie will join us next. All right, Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. Hopefully we catch up with Bob in just a moment. Later this hour, we've got two more battles courtesy of the Overdrive Madness bracket, this time in the Al's Brothers Farmers region. And Al's brother's been, you know, tooting around on Twitter. I've seen a couple of tweets from Al's brother, but
let's get him on tomorrow.
Yeah, we should actually.
Let's
lock that in.
From the attic or the cave or whatever, wherever he's being held captive.
Yeah, he's somewhere down in Niagara Falls, and
the Gimp Barn.
It scares me. It's concerning. The details that are limited, but also we saw it on Instagram. You were doing that Instagram live, and he was. It was a little weird what was going on.
Yeah,
with
we
Al's
still
brother.
Don't know what was in the drawer.
No,
like he quickly panicked.
Yeah,
like the camera shifted and the drawer. For some reason there was a drawer, and he was like, nothing to see here, folks. So I think we have to really grill him about that.
Yeah, we got to get to the bottom of what's going on with Al's brother and the drawer and
sledgehammer and a leather mask.
Yeah, living whips and everything, living up in an attic somewhere in the Niagara region.
Yeah.
So, we'll get to the bottom of that tomorrow. We'll call up Al's brother.
For sure.
That sounds good. We got a couple more audio brackets that we'll get to a little bit later in the hour, potentially at Jerry's After Dark, so we can do that. You know that 35 years ago today, the first Air Jordan shoes were released? And
wow.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it, just reading about that. I guess they opened up in only three or four markets. I think it was Chicago, L.A., New York, and maybe Raleigh, North Carolina, actually, which is where Jordan's from, or where North Carolina is. And that's got to be the number one pop culture shoe. Like, we've been talking a lot about pop culture today, but, like, that is the most groundbreaking shoe or sports apparel in the history of sports marketing. Nothing
dude,
is
I have,
even close.
I still have four pairs of retro Air Jordans.
Really?
Yeah, like I wear them all the time with track suits or whatever. Like, you wonder what if he thought, he's like, oh, okay, I'll do a shoe or whatever. Did he have any idea it would amount to what it did?
No, I mean, way.
What do you,
no.
What do you like, honestly, and I like, is he made $1 billion off
yes.
of
it? Oh, all yeah. day.
He's. I think he might be making close to that annually. Like, mm-hmm. I think his yeah. annual take, because he's got the Jumpman brand, the Jordan brand, who has now brought in other athletes. Like, Jeter was a part of it. There's a bunch of guys. I think, doesn't, like, LeBron's got his own shoe, but I feel like it might fall under Jordan. And everything that his name is on, he makes, like, a pretty significant portion of money. And it's everywhere. Like, they,
yeah,
it's just not
that
just
logo
shoes.
Jumping in the air, holding the basketball, spread eagle. That's yep. that's the anything that's on, he's getting a piece of it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was in the 80s. Like, that was way before he turned into what he turned into. Like, the documentary that's going to be revealed or going to start in a couple of weeks, that's about him in his prime when he was winning titles and the three-peat and then the other three-peat. But the shoe came out 35 years ago. It came out in 1985. He was in the league for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was clearly a big brand, and he was dunking on everyone, and everyone knew that this guy had immense talent. But, man, did Nike get in there. Like, that was a game changer for Nike. Nike wouldn't be here today without Jordan. You know, they'd still, I would assume, they'd still be a massive brand. But when right. you think of the main sports apparel brand in the United States, Nike is so clearly number one. It's not even close.
Yeah. You like, wonder if there was ever a point where it's like, okay, Michael Jordan, thank you very much for your time. Maybe we'll cut you out of this now, and we'll just continue back being Nike, and we're going to buy you out of that logo. I don't know. You wonder how that
I think they need it. Clearly, it works for them. Clearly, they're happy paying him, you know, $300-400 million a year. That means they're making billions a year.
Yeah.
Just from his shoe alone. Whenever a new shoe comes, they're still making Jordan shoes, and yeah. they're the most popular shoes. Here's our TSN hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. Have you ever owned a pair of Air Jordans, Bob?
As a matter of fact, the answer would be no.
Interesting. 35 really? Years ago today they came out.
No, but know, what about this, Bobby? Did you ever have to buy those sons of yours Air Jordans?
Yeah, I think I did that. Guarantee it. Guarantee it. Yeah, because early on, like, the kids never actually played basketball, but obviously they weren't just basketball shoes. They're a style statement. But I know for a period of time there, when the boys were playing lacrosse, a lot of guys were using Air Jordans for lacrosse, because it's obviously the same sort of cutting and as you were having a basketball game. So, yeah, in answer to your question, I guess I have purchased them, just not for myself.
Yeah, right. You're not wearing them. You're just dishing out the plastic. But
now, before we go any further, Duke, I got to ask you guys, have we had any – I haven't been listening to the show today – but have we had any Joe Buck moments at all? Or...
Joe Buck is in a cave somewhere with no internet access.
Oh my! I saw the clip on social media last night, and I was watching it and laughing, and you guys were laughing uncontrollably. I was laughing uncontrollably. That was good stuff.
How great was that? Joe Buck, people just sending sex tape after sex tape to Joe Buck, pleading with him to put a play-by-play on it. It will get disturbing at some point, and we stated that yesterday, but is there one play-by-play guy that sticks out to you in the hockey community, Bob, like Foster Hewitt?
You know, the funny thing is, I'm born and bred Toronto guy. I grew up as a Leaf fan when I was a kid. But, and so some people would naturally assume, well, then you're a Foster Hewitt guy. Danny Gallivan for me was, to this day, Danny Gallivan calling a game in the Stanley Cup playoffs, that's magic. That's the best it'll ever be, the best it ever has been. And I love all today's play-by-play guys, and we've obviously got two great ones at TSN, and then, well, more than two, you know, now Brian Mudrick's doing play-by-play and what have you, but Gord and CC do a great job. But boy, oh boy, Danny Gallivan's voice and the mannerisms and the sayings and everything, just everything about him was, I guess, the hair on the back of my neck stands up when I think about Danny Gallivan calling a Stanley Cup playoff game. That, for me, is hockey.
Yeah, I have... you know, similar recollections of Bob Cole. Like, Cole was my guy growing up.
I love Coley, too.
Yep.
Love
Yeah.
Love Coley. Yep. Absolutely.
Can't go wrong, like you said. But, like, we played a clip earlier on Leafs Lunch. Andy's doing the, like, the best Leaf game of the past 30 years. They got a bracket going. And Bob Cole, she played the clips of Cole calling the two Steve Thomas goals back in 2000 against, I think it was it Philly? I don't remember who they were playing against. And Cole is just in his prime and lights out, and he just – it's rising to the moment, right? Like, that's what the best do. You can feel it. They're always prepared. They're always ready. They don't chew their tongue off when they're not supposed to, and that's Cole's what makes voice, it so great.
Yeah, Bob Cole's voice did a better job of reflecting the excitement of the game than almost anybody. The ability just to somehow capture – the emotion and elevated in his voice. And so Gallivan and him are my two favorites of all time.
With Bob McKenzie, our TSN hockey insider, we were talking earlier about the bonuses that have to be paid on July 1st here in Toronto. It's something like $63 million. You know, it seems like throughout the sporting world, everyone's getting asked for a rollback or some sort of reduction. I would have to believe those would be reduction proof on July 1?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Other than escrow, I mean, you know, the signing bonuses are actually subject to escrow. So whatever, you know, let's look at it contractually. We talked earlier, like, well, if we're not playing Stanley Cup playoff games till August or September, what happens to all those contracts that expire on June 30th? And what we said was, well, an accommodation will be reached if we're playing playoff hockey for 2020 in the August or September months. You know, those contracts are all going to be extended and made valid with an agreement with the PA. It'll be the same thing with the signing bonuses. You know, I can't imagine Austin Matthews and all these Leafs are going to get $60 million cash on July 1st if there's no hockey being played, unless there is absolutely no hockey going to be played until next season starts. And that is July 1st continues to be the first day of the new hockey season. But if it's still in limbo, then all that stuff's going to get deferred until we know what the first day of the new season is going to be. And could that be September 1? Could it be October 1? We don't know. But you would think all those things would get deferred. But the actual dollars they will get will be those dollars, and minus escrow, though.
Well, I think that conversation actually started. We were talking about Mike Babcock, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's still getting paid. What does he have left? Three years left on his deal?
Yeah, I think so. Two or three for sure, yeah.
Yeah, they're not calling him up and asking for a COVID-19 reduction. That's not happening.
No, he's getting paid in full, that man, for sure.
But I know this is the ultimate hypothetical because we don't know when we're going to return, but it kind of feels like it's almost like once we get back, especially if this whole year gets wiped out, it's like, let's just forget about the past. Like, we're all going to apply amnesia in a weird way. Do you think that maybe could elevate Mike Babcock's status around the game, considering, you know, the way he went out, it wasn't so great. But if we snap out of this in 6 months, could you see a team being like, all right, we've moved on far enough where we can bring Babcock back into the fold?
In my mind, yeah, absolutely. But I felt that way before anyways. I didn't necessarily think that if everything had gone and the season hadn't been shut down or paused or whatever, if it just had been business as usual, I couldn't accurately or confidently predict that Babcock would get a job in this offseason as a head coach in the NHL. But I think we were asked, we were asked a quiz question to that effect. And I thought by the middle of next season, if somebody's struggling and they think Mike Babcock's the answer for what ails them, yeah, he'll get a job.
We were just talking about it. Some team needs to get over, much like Brian or Daryl Sutter when he went to Los Angeles. They needed a veteran guy to get in there and kick guys in the backside. That was probably not the right thing to say, but like just to get a team going.
Yes, figuratively speaking, oh, that's right.
Yeah. So some team might need that next year, and that he might be a guy that they call.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and everybody, you know, you'd like to think everybody lives and learns and what have you. And again, I'm not going to reopen this can of worms, but I guess we kind of have a little bit here. But, I mean, the Billy Peters thing and so much of what went down, and that. And Babcock kind of got into that whole thing too because the stories about Mitch Marner and what have you. And everybody thinks they're an expert on those things. And we only are anecdotally from the sidelines kind of, well, we know that something happened between Babcock and Marner, but we don't know exactly what it was. But, and we're not forgiving things if the things weren't done properly. But again, you know, everybody's got to move on and get better. And so we'll go in. And so I guess what I'm saying is whatever Babcock was accused of saying or doing with Mitch Marner, I'm not sure I would find an equivalency with a lot of the stuff that happened after the fact. And yet a lot of it got swept up in that whole thing and everybody kind of got painted with that brush. So, you know, as I said, everybody's got to take responsibility for what they did. Everybody's better if they live and learn and move on and get other opportunities. And I don't, you know, outside, I can't think of very many people who don't deserve more opportunities or deserve to be in the penalty box for the rest of their life. That's for sure.
Yeah. With Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider. Getting back to Jordan here before we let you go. Michael Jordan, his documentary is going to be debuting in a few weeks on ESPN, a 10-part, 10-hour documentary on Jordan and the Bulls and the dynasty. Is there a team in NHL history that you can think of that could maybe supply us with 10 hours of material, or is there one in particular where you would love to see a documentary on that specific team? Is there one that sticks out to you?
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. You know, I'm fascinated. I'm still fascinated by everything that happened with the Broad Street Bullies. Mm-hmm. And the whole Fred Shiro and how he approached the hockey, and, you know, and they were winners, but they were like, it was just mayhem. Like they just terrorized. It was like a motorcycle gang rode through the National Hockey League. It's like Hell's Angels and Satan's Choice pulled up to Madison Square Garden. And it was like, woo, let's go, boys. And they won two cups and, you know, put guys in the Hall of Fame. And I find that whole aspect absolutely fascinating. So that's one that I could never really get enough of. You know, other than that, I'm trying to think off the top of my head if there's another team or group that would have, you know, we had the boys on the bus. I haven't watched them since it probably came out, but that was good stuff. I mean, that gave you a glimpse into, you know, the Oilers and how brash they were and Slats and how he sort of set the table and set the tone for all these cocky young kids to come up and, you know, and even that, having lived it, when the Oilers assumed the mantle from the Islanders, it was fascinating that year that the Oilers beat the Islanders and just how nasty it was and just how bitter the feelings were and how the Islanders at that time were the venerable old guard, you know, Clark Gillies and Bob Nystrom and Brian Krejci and Mike Bossy and Denny Potvin and Billy Smith and all these guys. And then you had these brash upstarts who, you know, in a manner of speaking, you felt like they're not giving these guys from the island any respect, but it was more just they were young, cocky, brash, and they got the job done. And that whole transition was really cool. And I don't know if, like, when we go to a Stanley Cup final now, and it's great, I enjoy it, it's awesome, but the animosity between the Oilers and the Islanders in that Cup final when the Oilers actually won it, that was something else.
Yeah, that doesn't get brought up enough. The Islanders winning 19 straight playoff series. 19. Yeah. Like they went four in a row, then they went back to a Cup final. It's amazing. Great stuff, Bob. As always, we'll do it again later in the week.
Awesome. Thanks, boys.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. 19 in a row. At least haven't won a playoff run in over 15 years. Just to circle back on that.
Well, I, you know what? Just quickly, I know we got to go, but I would like to see like a tell-all 10-part series of those Oilers in the 80s.
Yes.
Like I believe me, I know a few stories from being close with Grant Fear. Like to have a tell-all, man, oh, man.
I think that would be amazing. Some of those, even though they had no success, epic failures, some of those Ranger teams the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. They knew how to let it roll.
Oh man. The payroll was through the roof, and they didn't win anything. But they probably were having a time on those teams. All right, two more battles in the Madness Overdrive bracket. We'll get to that next.
I'm having a good time. Not.
Glory, Gloria!
The Overdrive Madness Bracket.
This guy's such an idiot here.
And the bracket brought to you by Maple Toyota. Maple is in the name, and everything our Maple Leaf stands for is why we will get through this together. Take care of yourself and each other, MapleToyota.com. All right, these two battles courtesy of Al's Brothers Farmers Region. Another Wayne's World clip here. There's a lot of Wayne's World contingency in here and a lot of content, but today it just happened to be three different clips in four different battles. So let's begin with Wayne's World.
I'm having a good time. Not.
You ever see that scene in Scanners when that dude's head blew up?
So that would be, of course, when Wayne Campbell stormed off the set and Garth had to host on his own. So that's the first clip going up against this legendary clip.
Strike to claim it. A strike to claim it. And he got it!
That is right! I did it! Another five! Are you kidding me?
There he is, Pete Weber, the legendary.
Who do you think you are? I am.
Yeah, I think Pete's got a good shot here. Up against another battle where I think there's some disparity here. I think this one is going to be a lopsided victory for this clip.
And they are the champions. Glory, Gloria.
Yes.
Gloria. Gloria. I got your number, Gloria.
Just walk that through.
That wins.
Yeah, just walk that right through to the final.
That should have been a bye. That should have been a bye.
He's winning. That's winning.
Yeah, I think it's got a real good shot. I think it might be Gloria up against We Went Blues.
Yes.
It may be an all Brett Hull final. So Hull is going up against Billy Madison's principal.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I feel like he's saying that about Brett Hull and Hull's speech. But there you have it. You can vote online at Overdrive1050 on Twitter, at TSN1050 on Instagram. It's been a fun one today. Masai Ujiri, we had Jason Spezza, Patrick McEnroe on the show, Bobby Mack, Jerry. It's been a beautiful, beautiful afternoon here on Overdrive. But we're out of here. Oh, take it away.
Say goodbye in Korean. Ne il ne shi I dashi oseyo.
Yes, we will. We'll chat then.